All right, so why study the Bible and how to study the Bible? Been talking about logic and laws of logic, and we've just concluded basic details pertaining to ways of thinking are classified here on the screen. So we're not going to go back into all that, but those again are sometimes technical terms or technical ways of explaining the obvious or what we do all the time insofar as how we reason. And it also helps us expose faulty reasoning. So again, try not to be confused, or try not to, again, overthink that. Those are just phrases that are given sometimes to help us understand the way we think, logic, reason. So let's talk about religious authority. And look at this a little bit more practically insofar as how people arrive at conclusions and why there are so many differences in religion to this day, and why, again, those differences exist. So in the book, chapter 5, Kevin points out three different categories that generally are used in establishing religious authority. A lot of times we'll look at the question, what is required, what is prohibited, and then what is optional. It's in that third category there, what is optional, that most probably run wild, because everything becomes sometimes optional when that's not the case. When we reason through the scriptures and we see certain examples, especially when the question is posed, what must I do in order to be saved? A question that is biblical. If that question is given an option or an optional answer, then it doesn't matter what we do or how we answer that question. And there's no true metric, and then there's no true way or absolute way of knowing whether or not a person is saved or not. So again, there are just some things that are obvious that we know cannot be optional. I want to again emphasize the question, the second one, what is prohibited? Well, a lot of times we emphasize the direct statement that clearly says something is prohibited. For example, fornication, porneia in the original language, which would be associated with like pornography today and so forth. Well, that's a clear prohibition in the Bible. We need to abstain from that. Drunkenness is another prohibition. We're told to be sober-minded. Drunkenness is a work of the flesh, and that's a problem. But then we get into these debates today about what is allowed, insofar as if it's prohibited, well, can we do this? And so sometimes those questions are a little bit not so clear. But yet, nonetheless, you'll find this often in your own thinking. What is required? We can read a statement like when it comes to worship or a means of worship, sing with grace in your hearts. And that idea in the New Testament, sing, is clear. But you have to go back to the laws of exclusion and such that we talked about in the previous chapter to understand why everything but singing would be prohibited. Do you see the point? So that's where we get in trouble. It's kind of like a child sometimes. You give a child authority to go do something, and you tell them to go and pick up the mail. All right, simple task, run down to the mailbox, get the mail, and come back. What did you not tell them to do? If you're a parent and you told your child, hey, come here, go get the mail, and bring it to me. Did you mean do it tomorrow or did you mean do it right now? How many of you have had children that have debated that? Well, you didn't say when to do it. You see, we deal with the measure, the idea of authority all the time. So again, back to I told you to go get the trash. Why is it 2 hours later? Or the mail, why is it 2 hours later? I'm looking for a bill. You haven't brought the mail. Well, I'm still playing my video game. Can I finish the video game in 30 minutes? You see, we're having to, again, establish parameters. If I said go get the mail and bring it back to me, again, what did I say not to do? Everything else. I didn't say go down the road and play hopscotch and throw rocks at the cows or the horse or whatever. I said go get the mail and come back. So if you look out the window and you're watching your child and they're just meandering along and they're not doing what you asked them to do, there's an issue there. And you're going to probably address that as a parent if you can. So again, those are things that we want to talk about more. But again, these questions come up, but they don't really solve the problem, so to speak, as far as how do we establish religious authority. Again, what is optional is where we get into all kinds of crazy stuff. People say, well, the Bible doesn't say that. It doesn't say I can't do it. Well, what makes you think or assume you can do it? That's the way you really need to reason. So we talk about logical deduction. So we'll, again, continually examine some of these ideas in the book. So religious authority. Within society, we can distinguish at least five views regarding moral authority. These views are not all right. Not necessarily all wrong, but certainly not all right. Again, most people will say all is allowed. You're humanist. And the moral parameters that are established are just based upon, well, we just didn't like it. Okay? It didn't feel comfortable. A second one would be all that is conscious is allowed, all that the conscience allows is allowed. So how many of you have heard, well, go by your heart. If your heart allows it, then it must be allowed. Well, what if you were raised in a different fashion and your dad didn't allow you to do that, but your neighbor over here did allow you to do that? You know, is that the proper way to establish religious authority? Just because one person's conscience is clear, the others may not be. We'll talk more about that one. All that the church allows is allowed. How many of y'all have heard of the Roman Catholic Church? The Roman Catholic Church says that church authority is established by the church. And that would go back to papal authority and so forth. And they claim that religious authority is delegated from God to the church. And whatever the church says, papal authority in particular, the popes, the cardinals, down to the bishops and down to the local synods and dioceses and all this, then they can establish what is what they'll refer to as, we call it expediency, they'll call it just measures of progressiveness. Well, today it might be accepted, but we have the prerogative to change it if it doesn't fit. And so their authority standards and metrics can change anytime they want to. And so we're still, again, examining all that society distinguishes. A fourth one would be all that is not prohibited is allowed. Again, back to this idea of, well, it didn't say it, so it must be allowed. Is that good thinking? Royce?
Yeah. When people go with that kind of reasoning, they would have to come back and think about how long and how big the Bible would be if God specifically said every minute little thing was not, this is not, this is not, this is not a, nobody can carry a Bible around.
That's right.
We understand that everyday life. They don't have to post a sign on the highway that says 75. Oh, and don't drive 80, and don't drive 85, and don't drive. The signs would be massive.
Right. I think there are 613 positive and negative, specific or different commands in the Old Testament. First five books of the Bible. Law of Moses that's defined. 613 have been itemized. Most of them are in the negative. That is, thou shalt not. And some of them are so trivial as thou shalt not eat a pig or so forth. or thou shalt not have relations with a woman when she's menstruating. Stuff like that. Those are commands in the Old Testament. Pretty detailed.
Some of them weren't things that were just things that went on at the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely irrelevant to anybody.
Yeah, they were certainly relevant to their day and age. To abstain, to help them abstain from idolatry. Paul will summarize the law, the Apostle Paul, in Galatians 3:19-24, when he says, what then was the law added for? It was given then for the purpose of keeping them from transgressing against God, keeping them guided and focused in a world of known idolatry. You have to remember that the law of Moses was revealed. The law of Moses that Moses writes was not revealed on the day Genesis chapter 1 took place in reality. The law of Moses did not exist in writing when Abraham was alive. Abraham was about 500 years before the actual law of Moses. He wasn't under the law of Moses, those 613. But there were some general patriarchal rules that were adopted. And so what's interesting about the Old Testament, as you study it, those 10 commandments that are related in Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 and following, at the foot of Mount Sinai. And then they're repeated in the book of Deuteronomy. Those are pretty comprehensive if you think about the general principle of each one of those 10 commandments. And the first 5 will reflect the relationship we should have with God in general. In other words, thou shalt not be an idolater. You should have no gods before me. You should not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. And those first 5 seem to indicate what will become known as the first and great commandment. Which, do you remember what that first and great commandment is? Yeah. And Jesus puts that into words himself in the books of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John. Matthew, Mark, and Luke in particular. So in the ministry of Jesus, he kind of compartmentalizes those first 5 of the 10 commandments and says they really all have to do with loving God first, putting him first in all things. So it's kind of a summary statement. And then he says the second is like unto it. Well, if you look at the other 5 commandments, they are all commands that really are telling us how to behave and interact with mankind. In other words, men, you can't have another man's wife. She don't belong to you. That'll help you get along in culture and societies if you'll learn to behave. And so those latter 5 kind of help us. But that, again, is just a principle. But there are, again, 613 positive and negative specifics under the law of Moses. Now, are we under the law of Moses today? No. Matthew 5:17-20 says that the law of Moses has been fulfilled on the cross. Christ died and nailed that thing to the cross, and so fulfilled. He says, think not that I've come to destroy the law and the prophets, came not to destroy, but to fulfill. If it's fulfilled and it's the old diatheke, and we're under the new kainé diatheke, New Testament versus Old Testament, Jeremiah the prophet predicted this. The Hebrews writer talks about the confirmation of it. We're not under. And I'm not obliged to those 613 commands. Now, I might find some principles that I can relate to that make sense, and there might be a principle brought over in the New Testament, authority of Christ, but I'm not under the Old Testament. So now I'm asking these questions, and I'm looking for religious authority. In the Old Testament, what was prohibited that's not prohibited in the New Testament? So why do the Catholics have a whole week where they abstain from certain things, put ash on their heads? Is that in the New Testament, or would that be probably principles robbed from the Old Testament? Sacramental principles, or whatever you want to call them, from the Old Testament. They're not in the New Testament. If you're going to abstain from certain things for a week, during Lent week, under the Roman Catholic, Well, are you allowed to go back to it after you quit? Like, I had a guy that I worked with. He was a practicing Catholic. And this was a question of authority. I was challenged by it. I was a young man. And it just, I'd ask questions. He ended up firing me, by the way. He didn't want me around. I asked too many questions. And I was asking genuinely. I wasn't mad at him, but he got mad at me. He came in one day, had some, I thought was dirt on his forehead, and he had to go and talk to clients, and I thought, well, he don't want dirt on his forehead. You know, I was trying to take care of him. I said, you need to take that and rub that off. He got mad at me on that one. But he was also an avid drinker and a tobacco user. He used a lot of tobacco. But during that week, guess what he abstained from? Those two things. But you know what he didn't give up on? Bad language, cussing. He told me that one. He said, I don't have to give up on that one. I can keep that one. Well, that just kind of turned me all around in my mind. I thought, well, that's just crazy. So you're telling me you can quit that for a week, but are you going to quit for good or are you just going to go right back to it? Well, I hadn't made my mind up yet, but for as a good Catholic, I'm going to quit for at least a week. What do y'all think about that? Is that the way God authorizes? Is that moral authority? You know, you got a little permission to do bad 51 weeks out of the year, but 1 week of the year, you got to have to abstain. Is that the way we think? Does that sound reasonable, logical, moral? But that's what his thinking was, because he was taught that. That was religious. And I wasn't mad at him, but I've learned a valuable lesson. I talked to him, and he just didn't like me for a while because, I never got mad at him. I was a little disappointed when I lost my job. I was getting married. You're married to one?
I'm married to
one. Yeah.
Find him, but she probably
never
known a finer human being than my wife, and we would tries to live the faith. But so I get exposed to.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Judaism.
So you see it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. And so it is, and they have a lot of things, but not just them, other people. And so we get into this issue. Number five, all that which God approves is allowed. Well, that's pretty good. I mean, I'm wrapping my mind around that one thinking, well, if God approves it, then it would be allowed, right? And I wouldn't argue with that one. But nonetheless, those tend to be five at least distinguishable ways people try to establish or regard moral authority. We're going to get more into this a little bit into this chapter that are just going to continually reiterate what the Bible teaches. But we have to be careful because there's this problem called situational ethics that the religious world really struggles with. And I'm not going to go into this deep, but let me just use a recent example of a historical character, and I want to ask you a question. But how many of you have heard of Adolf Hitler? You heard of him? All right. Now, what's the thing you remember, you think about when you think of Adolf Hitler?
Negative.
Okay, negative. But anything in particular, specific? What was he?
Genocide.
Okay, genocide of whom?
Jews.
Why?
Biased.
Just biased?
Hatred.
Okay, and what justified that?
Blonde hair, blue eyes, German.
Okay.
A lot of that comes from Catholics, too. Catholics.
If you start getting into historical details, his philosophy was a little religious. Partly. Now, it was a crazy religion. They had a dark, dark side, and I'm not going to get into all that, but my point is really simple. Under the New Testament, let's just make a moral argument, a very simple moral argument. In Galatians chapter 3, if you'll take your Bible, let's look at it. Galatians chapter 3, verses 26 through 29. I want you to tell me in regard to salvation, what there is neither of. It doesn't matter here in regard to salvation, and we're going to break this down just a little bit. But if someone would like to read Galatians 3, 26 through 29.
For you are all sons of God through faith in Christ Jesus. For as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither slave nor free, there is neither male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you are Christ, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise.
All right, so in that passage, is he talking about that there's not a male or female gender? All right. Is he talking about that there is not a Jew or Gentile culture? No. But what is he talking about?
God doesn't differentiate.
When it comes to?
One being more important than another.
Okay. As it pertains to? Spiritual or salvation. So, in that passage there, if you're going to call yourself a Jew in that context, would being called a Jew save you? No. If you're in that context, you say, well, I'm a Gentile. I'm not a Jew. Would that in and of itself save you? No. All right, I'm a male, and I'm more important and more powerful, and I'm the first created, and I'm all that and everything else, and I'm better than the woman. Is that what is being said there? Or? Okay. Always more women. So he's talking about sons of God there now. What's interesting in that term, he didn't say daughters, he said sons. And he's using that phraseology to talk about all those categories. All right? So he's talking about a relationship back to God through Jesus Christ, through by faith, through baptism, into Christ, where you've been clothed and put on. All right, now, what's interesting is that the Jewish religion there wouldn't do something for people. Paul writing to the churches of Galatia, if you look at Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, what law is he talking about that will save us today? You see it? The law of what? All right, now look down, drop down to verse 15. Someone read verse 15.
Neither circumcision nor uncircumcision counts for anything. The only thing that matters is a new creation.
Okay, is that Galatians 6:16?
All who will behave in accordance with this rule.
Yes.
Peace and mercy be on them and on the Israel of God.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're right. I should have said verse 15 and 16. So we got the rule there in verse 16. Circumcision, which is a reference back to what, will not do you any good. Jewish. The law of Christ is what we're talking about in Galatians 6, 2. All right. In chapter 3 of that book, he's talking about how the law has been fulfilled. It was a tutor, as a schoolmaster, but look at Galatians 3, verse 24. I mentioned it a moment ago. Look at verse 19 and 24. Someone read those two passages.
What purpose then does the law serve? It was added because of transgressions, so the seed should come to whom the promise was made.
Okay, stop right there, Chad, just for a moment. When he uses the phrase the law, we notice in chapter 6, verse 2, he uses the phrase law, but what law is he talking about in chapter 6, verse 2? So, is he talking about the same law in chapter 3, verse 19? No. You got to look at the context here. So then look at verse 24, please.
Therefore, the law was a tutor to bring us to Christ, that we might be justified by faith.
Okay, so in the book of Galatians alone, we see a contrasting effect of two different laws. We read the first passage, verses 26 through 29, chapter 3. The faith there is a reference to the law of Christ. If you study that out, Sometimes faith is used objectively as the faith, like Jude 3, the faith which was once for all delivered. And it has reference to New Testament Christianity or the law of Christ, Galatians 6:2, or the rule in Galatians 6:16. The word rule in Galatians 6:16 is very interesting because it's the word canon in the original language. Canon. Now, I'm still talking about Adolf Hitler here. Do you think Adolf Hitler was privy to the fact that Judaism or Old Testament, the law of Moses, had been fulfilled or done away with? Do you think he had any hint of that? Do you think he knew something or a little bit about Christianity?
If he did, he would never have murdered the Jews.
Are you sure?
Maybe if he had an altar, he would have said it's a Christianity.
I believe
he
certainly didn't know
anything about Christianity. I've studied a lot of amateur historians, and in years past, the Catholic Church was very down on Judaism. There were a lot of discrimination against Jews carried out by the Catholic Church for centuries.
So what efficacy did he place upon the Jews? What value? And why was it zero if it's zero? Because an argument he could make is that they were guilty of something. And they had been guilty of something for years and years and years. And were still guilty of it. So I think you ought to go back and do some more historical research. I would say he did know some things about Old Testament Judaism. He knew it probably from a very skewed perspective. I think the young man here is on to something. Roman Catholicism, Lutheranism was very popular. What is Lutheranism in Germany and in that culture? Anybody, just a general idea. Who was Martin Luther? He's strong, yes. But who was Martin Luther? One of the beginning, he had had enough of the perversions as he saw them in Roman Catholicism. He started advocating for faith, but in a very improper, imbalanced way. It was a bad swing in one sense. Do you think culturally Adolf Hitler was privy to some of that history? And in Europe, in European countries, was there a historical effect that he could speak to that affected economies? No matter what the motive was, there was a motive. My point is this. Let me segue. Go back to Exodus, the book of Exodus. We're talking about religious authority. And in Exodus chapter 1, 2, and 3, in chapter 1 in particular, there is a Pharaoh that arises. Look at verse 8, verse 7 and verse 8 of chapter 1. Okay. In verse 9, he looks around and sees the multiplication of these fertile Hebrews, Israelites, and it poses a threat. Something that's not really mentioned in this text as much, but do you remember where Joseph places the Israelites insofar as the land is concerned? Anybody know anything about Goshen? Very fertile. One of the richest areas in Egypt even to this day, the Nile River Basin. And so they're multiplying and there's a lot of value there. Culturally speaking, the Pharaoh here is a member of what back then were known as dynasties. Dynasties were family ordered authorities. And not only authorities, they were religious moral authorities. The Pharaohs were honored as what kind of people? Gods, deities, that's right. And that's pretty common in this culture. So now think about that as we were talking about the law of Moses. What was the law of Moses when Moses writes it, telling people to not do? Who were not gods? Men, idols. Who was God? Jehovah God. Yes, that's good. So in many ways, the Israelites are these little small foreign people that don't believe in all the Canaanite idolatry and all these false ideas. Question. The Pharaoh here in Exodus chapter 1, what is his solution? Adolf Hitler had a solution to the problem. He had a solution. His solution was morally based in his own mind, based upon religious authority in his own mind. I didn't say it was right. Don't kid yourself. He had a moral motive. Pharaoh. What was Pharaoh's solution to the population control for the Israelites or Hebrews? And how? Yeah, but where were they going to, remember what they were supposed to do? Throw them in the Nile River. Let me ask you a question. That Nile River, was it or was it not worshipped as a deity? It was a sacrifice. The Pharaoh could have very easily. Now, this is just speculation, but I believe it's got some merit to it. Because man is not unique. Man is always trying to find moral authority for everything he does. The problem is man goes to the wrong source. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 12, just to kind of objectify what I'm saying here, all those 10 plagues were a judgment against something. And we know historically that frogs and we call them big jumbo grasshoppers out here in West Texas, but those critters, they represented in some means gods or their idols. Look at Exodus 12, verse 12. Tell me what happens there and what kind of the conclusion is at the close of those 10 plagues. Want to read that passage?
For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord.
And that was going to be the final and last. He was going to affect life, the firstborn, if they did not have the blood applied. Now, the phrase there, judgment against the gods. You think God's been fighting against the Egyptians just vainly, or was there intent with each and every one of those 10 plagues? And you see a battle going on, and God is actually giving this Pharaoh an opportunity to see who it is. You remember Pharaoh says, I do not know, you mentioned his name a moment ago, the Lord. Who is this Lord? He's a foreign deity. I've never met this Lord. And in essence, God says to Moses and Aaron, his spokesman, I'm going to show Pharaoh. And I'm going to give him the opportunity to let my people go. But I'm telling you, I know he will not let the people go. Go back to Pharaoh again. Do you imagine or suppose that if he thought he had approved authority by his God, he could control population? We do the same thing today in many ways, as I hear it. And we need to pay attention, not to again promote conspiracy. But people again are concerned, and I've heard it in the last years or two, that they're concerned about this thing called global warming. And one of the solutions is what I've heard, is that we're too many people. We need to depopulate. These are sanctified ways, by the way, of saying this. And you have what are World Economic Forum people and others, Bill Gates is a name that's associated, that come up with, guess what? Solutions. What was Mein Kampf? That was his solution. That was his solution. And did he get a following to go through with his solution for a while? Don't kid yourself. There was religious authority justified by their own means. Now, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. My point is to show you that men always are looking for moral justification for what they do. The question is what you do right or wrong? And how do we determine that? Okay. She's pointing at the Bible. And that's exactly right. So, let me just go to the next slide and we'll make a little bit of progress before Sunday morning, Lord willing. So, when we talk about religious authority, first, to the secular humanist, all is allowed, generally speaking. Lately, have you heard language like the absurd, obvious, contradictory thoughts that don't make any biological sense to any of us? How many of you question whether or not you're a boy or girl? Let me ask you another question. This is an adult class. Are there obvious factors that determine whether or not you're a boy or girl?
Yes.
Okay. All right, guys, be careful how you answer this, but do the ladies, especially if you're married, go through different cycles than you? Do you question? Pardon? It may take some of us a little longer to figure that out. You know, especially when you're first newlywed and married and so forth. But where in the world did we come up with the idea of gender-affirming care or gender is a choice?
Somebody thinking stupid.
I unfortunately, it wasn't gross, but saw where, I suppose, what they call a transgendered woman that went to man, who's married to a man. So both of them look like dudes. But guess what happened biologically between these two dudes? Well, a woman and a dude, but looked like a dude. Imagine that. And so they said the dude had a baby. They didn't say dude, they said... Yeah.
I call this our modern version of the Tower of Babel.
Another.
Man is trying to put himself above God.
And nothing's new under the sun, is it? And we're still fighting with logic and truth. So, to the second point there, without moral absolutes, then there can be no authority. Morals meaning what is right or prudent, derived from an objective source or base. Again, a provable base. What have we studied for the first four chapters? There's evidence, right? We're going to find that evidence and we're going to land on it. So in this case, we're created in God's image. The Bible says that. Genesis 1:26. Is there a logical deduction from that? If we are created in God's image, what are we not created in the image of? Anything else? What was then created in the first chapter of the book of Genesis that we're not created in the image of, to get more specific? Bugs, animals, fish. I don't have gills, even though the evolutionist says we came from, it might be kind of cool to go back and go undersea, but those animals in that ocean are big. They eat you. I'm done. I don't even like to get, I'll tell you what. I wasn't meant to be on the ocean. You want to go, go. But I like it right here on this dry land. I got a fighting chance on this dry land. When I go swimming with the whales, what happened to Jonah? All right, so I was created in God's image. That's my base. Therefore, we are to be of God and act as He desires. But we're faced with this again question. Moses wasn't challenged about which God. Think of the world Moses was living in when he writes the words of Genesis chapter 1, in the image of God were you created. And think about how impactful that was for a man living during the days of the Egyptians, who's going to go to war with the Egyptians, who's protected by his mother and his sister, and God shows him favor and he's protected and then raised up in Pharaoh's court, a surrounding of all this false pagan idolatry. And God will reveal himself as he gets him out of Egypt and delivers the people. And he says, now you go write these words. And he writes that in the image of God were you created. I want you to think about now the impact of those words in around 1500 BC for the first time. The revelation, the profound simplicity of it, but the power of it. When most of the world in 1500 BC was thinking in what terms? In what image were they made? Whatever they imagined. No wonder the prophets will write over and over again, it is not in man that walketh to direct his own steps. Man can't do this. Because look around you and see what man is doing. Look at the kinds of religious... Are they agreed? They weren't agreed then, and guess what today? We're not agreed today if we don't land on the right source. The truth. The God of the Bible. And so these ideas have to be established if we're ever going to find religious authority and be one and be right with God. Okay? So these are just some ideas to help us get really specific. These are tough ideas sometimes. Had a long conversation. I'll quit today at late lunch. I went and drank coffee with the guy. And actually, president of the company calls me. Said, I need to talk. We have a long conversation. And I thought we were going to talk business. He wanted to talk Bible. I said, well, let's get two cups. Since I'm on the clock. I'm sorry. So we had a good time. Good talk. And we talked a lot about various principles and so forth that we're all struggling with today. But we're going to keep talking about religious authority. And we're going to have to get specific into the details. So I've got more material. But that's the fifth chapter of this book. And so I appreciate your comments. Glad you're with us this evening. And we'll close for the evening. Get ready for the devotional period.